Welcome to the weekly podcast from the Church of England. This week, the Bishop to Prisons talks about a new report into the effects of changes to legal aid. The new Bishop of Hertford talks about his other work as a scientist. And as the TV drama Wolf Hall finishes, I visited Lambeth Palace Library to see their collection of books belonging and connected to Henry VIII. First, the Christian think tank Theos has released a report which looks at the impact of changes to the legal aid system. The report gives examples of cases where it's no longer available, such as with divorce and parent and child contact issues. The Bishop of Rochester, James Langstaff, who is also Bishop to Prisons, is one of several people who've written the foreword to the report. He explained more about it.
There are really two strands, one of which is a voice into the public debate about access to justice and some development of Christian principles that lie behind that. And also there's a challenge to the churches as well as to how we are going to respond in our local communities, for example, by legal aid projects and things like that, of which there are some excellent examples.
It does talk about a lot of legal aid that's no longer available. For instance, divorce cases, contact, and then also affecting housing law, employment, immigration. I mean, it paints quite a bleak picture.
It does. And it's important to emphasise that this isn't just a sort of let's bash the politicians thing. This is a real issue in our society as to who has access to justice and to the means of justice for what. And you mentioned the housing world, which is one I have an involvement with through Housing Justice, which I chair. And there it is the case that you still get legal aid for eviction cases, but not over issues, for example, of taking a landlord to court over disrepair or nuisance neighbours and things like that. So there is a sort of distinction coming in, and there is a debate to be had about people's right of access to justice and how society as a whole should ensure that.
The report does say that the effect is likely to, or the effect of these changes is likely to adversely affect the most disadvantaged in our society.
That's probably the case, because if you go back into our biblical heritage, part of the principles of justice in the Hebrew Scriptures relate to the mechanisms within society whereby the leaders of communities were charged with making sure that the poorest had access to justice, i.e. justice isn't just the preserve of those who are wealthy or those who are powerful. And indeed, as a society, we have a right in succession to those elders of the communities in Hebrew times. We have a responsibility to ensure that people have access to justice. And that's a matter of significant public debate. And of course, if people don't have access to justice, that then can lead to disaffection and to breakdown of social relationships and cohesion and so forth.
So what are the good examples of that you have found?
Oh, there's some great examples. I mean, when I was a parish priest in Birmingham some years ago now, there was a parish just neighbouring mine which had an excellent legal advice service, and this is going back into the 1980s, I guess, which was based in the parish church, serving the wider community. It was something which that parish had felt was an issue in their local community, and they'd found a response to it. All over the country, there are Christian lawyers giving their time pro bono to local community advice centres and so forth, both organisations that are explicitly Christian and those that are not. And so there's an awful lot going on whereby people are using their skills, using their opportunities to ensure that those who perhaps don't have much of a voice are given a voice.
You said that this wasn't about bashing politicians, but obviously it's the politicians who've made the decisions on the changes to legal aid. What responsibility have they got now, and what would you like to see them do?
The recommendation here is to keep the legal aid changes under review. And we would hope that any government would want to do that anyway, because whenever there's a policy decision made and a change made, it's important that one analyses the effects of that, and particularly those who may be affected for ill by those changes. So we would hope that any government would want to do that anyway, and perhaps this is an opportunity just to encourage that and make sure it happens. Because, as I've said before, it is absolutely fundamental to how society operates and to the well-being of society. And if it fails, then we've got problems. So there is that word addressed to government in the formal sense, but also there's the word addressed very clearly to the churches and to the wider community about how we take responsibility for these things.
The Bishop of Rochester, James Langstaff, and you can find the Theos report on their website. The new Bishop of Hertford has been announced as Canon Michael Beasley, who's currently Director of Mission in the Diocese of Oxford. Until recently, he's combined two roles, one as a Church of England priest and secondly as a research scientist. I caught up with him on the morning of the announcement and asked him about his life as a scientist.
For a number of years, I combined working in Christian ministry and scientific research. So until 5 years ago, I was half-time vice principal at Westcott House in Cambridge, helping prepare new priests for ministry in the Church of England. And I combined that with a half-time post as director of a research group in the Department of Infectious Disease Epidemiology at Imperial College London. Our research group is called the Partnership for Child Development, and we work to improve the health and education of children in low-income countries.
That sounds really interesting, trying to combine those two. Did the worlds ever collide?
I found, actually, that the worlds were very helpful to one another. A lot of time, particularly latterly at Imperial, I was working on policy development in various countries in Africa and elsewhere. And it seemed to me that the best way to do that was through really good skills of listening and being attentive to what people wanted. And that's much of what a priest does. Similarly, I learned a great deal working in international development about how to make good plans that work for people in the church and that support ministry in the different places where we are.
It's an interesting situation with science and religion coming together. Clearly, you've never had an issue with that at all.
No, I don't think so. I think it's largely to do with how you understand the world. I don't believe that the only things that we can have faith in life are what we can prove scientifically. I think that's very, very reductive. I don't think science tells us everything. It's a fantastic way of understanding the physical world, but to understand things like our values, our understanding of love, our understanding of purpose and why we're here, I don't think science can give the whole story. It can be very, very informative, but it's not the whole picture.
Are you going to miss it as you take on your new role as bishop?
I guess so. I've been working in Oxford for the last 5 years, and I've kept a toe in the water. So I've continued to work with one UN working group on HIV and education. And I've also done some work on supporting education of orphans and vulnerable children in Kenya and Nigeria. But I suspect I'm probably moving on from that now. But to new pastures, and I'm looking forward to those.
As the BBC's adaptation of Wolf Hall finishes, its director has been to Lambeth Palace Library to look at the books they hold connected with Henry VIII. I went to meet Giles Mandelbrot, who's a librarian and archivist there, to have a look at the books. Now, we're standing in front of a couple of tables and we've got about 10 books here. Tell me about a couple of the most significant ones we have here.
Yes. Well, shall we look at this one over here?
You're putting it on a lovely grey cushion, presumably so as not to damage it.
That's just to give it a bit of support, because obviously these are 500-year-old manuscripts. This is an amazing manuscript, really. It's very beautifully coloured, and it's a genealogy. It shows the descent of Henry VIII, traced all the way back to the Garden of Eden and to Adam, and it shows Henry's descent through the Old Testament onto the Anglo-Saxon and Norman kings, and then right through, ending up right at the end of the book, Henry VIII. Henry VIII is shown as being married twice. On the left you can see Catherine of Aragon and a note in Latin saying that the marriage has afterwards been repudiated. And then on the right-hand side, his second marriage to Anne.
Do we know why it would have stopped then? Because as you say, with this beautifully intricate and still so colourful after 500 years, it's amazing. So why would it have stopped with Anne Boleyn?
Well, this sort of document was produced very often as a diplomatic gift or a piece of propaganda. And so it's presumably been produced right at, immediately after the marriage to Anne Boleyn. It's before Elizabeth, the birth of Queen Elizabeth. So it's there to record that moment in time, really, and to record the legitimacy of the marriage.
Which, as we know, didn't end well.
It didn't end well, no, it didn't end well at all. And, of course, one could, if one wanted to capture the Henry VIII's marriage record, you would need a much more complicated series of circles.
And there's only one page left. We'd have needed many more pages.
You would, yes, you would.
Now, there's also a book, I understand, that was produced by Catherine of Aragon's family, which, again, was sort of propaganda, would you describe it as?
I suppose it's propaganda, but it's also a contribution to the debate, which was a scholarly and legal debate about how you interpreted scripture and ecclesiastical law in relation to marriage and who you were allowed to marry, because the whole issue in relation to Henry VIII was whether his marriage to Catherine of Aragon had been legal because he was marrying the widow of his brother. Later on, he tried to get out of the marriage on the basis that it had never actually been legal at all to marry his brother's widow. And this prompted this book, this text, which was written by a man called Thomas Abel, who was the chaplain to Catherine of Aragon. So it's obviously taking Catherine's side. It's called Invicta Veritas, the unvanquished truth, undefeated truth. And it specifically addresses this question of marrying your relation, whether it be your relation by blood or your relation by marriage.
And it's got some writing in the front.
It has. It's got an inscription in Henry VIII's hand, because this is Henry VIII's personal copy of the book. Henry VIII was a very scholarly man. He had a very good education. He could read Latin fluently. He could write it. He knew many modern European languages. And he has written in Latin on the front of this, essentially words to the effect that the argument of this book is completely worthless.
That's amazing. So that's actually his writing, that's, we can see at the bottom.
That's his writing, and you see his writing again in this section in the margin of the book, where the printed text addresses the very nub of the argument over the legality of his marriage, whether you're related to somebody by blood or by marriage. And you can see in the margin a rather querulous note by Henry VIII, pointing out an example where the proposition being suggested in the text just doesn't work. And he says this is false. And as you said earlier, this is a piece of propaganda in a way, because it's a printed text and it's trying to appeal to the world at large, at least to the educated world, the scholarly world. The divorce, of course, was a very public controversy at the time. It's interesting to see Henry actually engaging with the scholarly aspects of it, with the theoretical arguments, as well as trying, in the end, to push his own authority through and just get his way.
There are some photos of the books we were talking about on the Church of England's Facebook page. And you can find out more about the books and resources the library holds by going to their website, where you can also find a list of the material they have connected to Henry VIII. That's it for this week's podcast. Don't forget you can subscribe to the podcast on the iTunes store, and every new episode will automatically be updated on your device. I'm Gillian Moody. Thanks for listening.